Chapter 31. If I must, I must, says Padella, who was naturally very sulky. By this time King Giglio's aides-de-camp had come up, whom His Majesty ordered to bind the prisoner. And they tied his hands behind him, and bound his legs tight under his horse, having set him with his face to the tail, and in this fashion he was led back to King Giglio's quarters, and thrust into the very dungeon where young Bulbo had been confined. Padella, who was a very different person in the depth of his distress, to Padella, the proud wearer of the Crim Tartar crown, now most affectionately and earnestly asked to see his son, his dear eldest boy, his darling Bulbo, and that good-natured young man never once reproached his haughty parent for his unkind conduct the day before, when he would have left Bulbo to be shot without any pity, but came to see his father, and spoke to him through the grating of the door, beyond which he was not allowed to go, and brought him some sandwiches from the grand supper which His Majesty was giving above stairs, in honor of the brilliant victory which had just been achieved. I cannot stay with you long, sir, says Bulbo, who was in his best ball dress, as he handed his father in the prog. I'm engaged to dance the next quadrille with Her Majesty Queen Rosalba, and I hear the fiddles playing at this very moment. So Bulbo went back to the ballroom, and the wretched Padella ate his solitary supper in silence and tears. All was now joy in King Giglio's circle. Dancing, feasting, fun, illuminations, and jollifications of all sorts ensued. The people through whose villages they passed were ordered to illuminate their cottages at night and scatter flowers on the roads during the day. They were requested, and I promise you they did not like to refuse to serve the troops liberally with eatables and wine. Besides, the army was enriched by the immense quantity of plunder which was found in King Padella's camp and taken from his soldiers, who, after they had given up everything, were allowed to fraternize with the conquerors, and the united forces marched back by easy stages towards King Giglio's capital, his royal banner and that of Queen Rosalba being carried in front of the troops. Hedzoff was made a duke and a field marshal. Smith and Jones were promoted to be earls. The Crim Tartar Order of the Pumpkin, and the Paphlagonian Decoration of the Cucumber, were freely distributed by their majesties to the army. Queen Rosalba wore the Paphlagonian ribbon of the Cucumber across her riding habit, whilst King Giglio never appeared without the grand cordon of the Pumpkin. How the people cheered them as they rode along side by side! They were pronounced to be the handsomest couple ever seen. That was a matter of course, but they really were very handsome, and, had they been otherwise, would have looked so, they were so happy. Their majesties were never separated during the whole day, but breakfasted, dined, and supped together always, and rode side by side, interchanging elegant compliments, and indulging in the most delightful conversation. At night, Her Majesty's ladies of honor, who had all rallied round her the day after King Padella's defeat, came and conducted her to the apartments prepared for her, whilst King Giglio, surrounded by his gentlemen, withdrew to his own royal quarters. It was agreed they should be married as soon as they reached the capital, and orders were dispatched to the Archbishop of Lombardinga to hold himself in readiness to perform the interesting ceremony. Duke Hedzoff carried the message, and gave instructions to have the royal castle splendidly refurnished and painted afresh. The Duke seized Glomboso, the ex-prime minister, and made him refund that considerable sum of money which the old scoundrel had secreted out of the late king's treasure. He also clapped Valoroso into prison, who, by the way, had been dethroned for some considerable period past, and when the ex-monarch weakly remonstrated, Hedzoff said, "A soldier, sir, knows but his duty. My orders are to lock you up along with the ex-King Padella, whom I have brought hither a prisoner under guard." So these two ex-royal personages were sent for a year to the House of Correction, and thereafter were obliged to become monks of the severest order of flagellants, in which state, by fasting, by vigils, by flogging which they administered to one another, humbly but resolutely, no doubt they exhibited a repentance for their past misdeeds, usurpations, and private and public crimes. As for Glumboso, that rogue was sent to the galleys, and never had an opportunity to steal any more. XVIII. How they all journeyed back to the capital. The fairy Blackstick, by whose means this young king and queen had certainly won their respective crowns back, would come not unfrequently, to pay them a little visit as they were riding in their triumphal progress towards Giglio's capital, change her wand into a pony, and travel by their majesty's side, giving them the very best advice. I am not sure that King Giglio did not think the fairy and her advice rather a bore, fancying it was his own valor and merits which had put him on his throne and conquered Padella. And, in fine, I fear he rather gave himself airs towards his best friend and patroness. She exhorted him to deal justly by his subjects, to draw mildly on the taxes, never to break his promise when he had once given it, and in all respects, to be a good king. A good king, my dear fairy, cries Rosalba. Of course he will. Break his promise. Can you fancy my Giglio would ever do anything so improper, so unlike him? No. Never. And she looked fondly towards Giglio, whom she thought a pattern of perfection. Why is Fairy Blackstick always advising me, and telling me how to manage my government, and warning me to keep my word? Does she suppose that I am not a man of sense, and a man of honor? Asks Giglio testily. Ethinks she rather presumes upon her position. Hush! Dear Giglio, says Rosalba. Uno Blackstick has been very kind to us, and we must not offend her. But the fairy was not listening to Giglio's testy observations, as he had fallen back, and was trotting on her pony now, by Master Bulbo's side, who rode a donkey, and made himself generally beloved in the army by his cheerfulness, kindness, and good humor to everybody. He was eager to see his darling Angelica. He thought there never was such a charming being. Blackstick did not tell him it was the possession of the magic rose that made Angelica so lovely in his eyes. She brought him the very best accounts of his little wife, whose misfortunes and humiliations had indeed very greatly improved her. And, you see, she could whisk off on her wand 100 miles in a minute, and be back in no time, and so carry polite messages from Bulbo to Angelica, and from Angelica to Bulbo, and comfort that young man upon his journey. When the royal party arrived at the last stage before you reached Lombadinga, who should be in waiting, in her carriage there with her lady of honor by her side, but the Princess Angelica? She rushed into her husband's arms, scarcely stopping to make a passing curtsy to the king and queen. As he had no eyes but for Bulbo, who appeared perfectly lovely to her on account of the fairy ring which he wore, whilst she herself, wearing the magic rose in her bonnet, seemed entirely beautiful to the enraptured Bulbo. A splendid luncheon was served to the royal party, of which the archbishop, the chancellor, Duke Hedzoff, Countess Gruffanuff, and all our friends partook, the fairy Blackstick being seated on the left of King Giglio, with Bulbo and Angelica beside her. You could hear the joy bells ringing in the capital, and the guns which the citizens were firing off in honor of their majesties. What can have induced that hideous old Gruffanuff to dress herself up in such an absurd way? Did you ask her to be your bridesmaid, my dear? Says Giglio to Rosalba. Had a figure of fun Gruffy is. Gruffy was seated opposite their majesties, between the archbishop and the lord chancellor, and a figure of fun she certainly was, for she was dressed in a low white silk dress, with lace over, a wreath of white roses on her wig, a splendid lace veil, and her yellow old neck was covered with diamonds. She ogled the king in such a manner that his majesty burst out laughing. 11 o'clock. Cries Giglio, as the great cathedral bell of Lombadinga tolled that hour. Gentlemen and ladies, we must be starting. Archbishop, you must be at church, I think, before 12? We must be at church before 12, sighs out Gruffanuff in a languishing voice, hiding her old face behind her fan. And then I shall be the happiest man in my dominions, cries Giglio, with an elegant bow to the blushing Rosalba. Oh, my Giglio! Oh, my dear Majesty! Exclaims Gruffanuff. And can it be that this happy moment at length has arrived? Of course it has arrived, says the king. And that I am about to become the enraptured bride of my adored Giglio, continues Gruffanuff. End me a smelling bottle, somebody. I certainly shall faint with joy. You my bride? Roars out Giglio. You marry my prince? Cried poor little Rosalba. Pooh! Nonsense! The woman's mad! Exclaims the king. And all the courtiers exhibited by their countenances and expressions, marks of surprise, or ridicule, or incredulity, or wonder. I should like to know who else is going to be married, if I am not? Shrieks out Gruffanuff. Should like to know if King Giglio is a gentleman, and if there is such a thing as justice in Paphlagonia? Lord Chancellor. My Lord Archbishop. Will your lordship sit by and see a poor, fond, confiding, tender creature put upon? Has not Prince Giglio promised to marry his Barbara? Is not this Giglio's signature? Does not this paper declare that he is mine, and only mine? And she handed to His Grace the Archbishop the document which the prince signed that evening when she wore the magic ring, and Giglio drank so much champagne. And the old Archbishop, taking out his eyeglasses, read, his is to give notice that I, Giglio, only son of Savio, King of Paphlagonia, hereby promise to marry the charming Barbara Griselda Countess Gruffanuff, and widow of the late Jenkins Gruffanuff Esquire. H'M, says the Archbishop, the document is certainly a document. Phew, says the Lord Chancellor, the signature is not in His Majesty's handwriting. Indeed, since his studies at Bisforo, Giglio had made an immense improvement in calligraphy. Is it your handwriting, Giglio? Cries the fairy Blackstick, with an awful severity of countenance. Why, yes, poor Giglio gasps out, I had quite forgotten the confounded paper. She can't mean to hold me by it. You old wretch, what will you take to let me off? Help the queen, someone her majesty has fainted. Chop her head off. Exclaim the impetuous heads off. Smother the old witch. The ardent smith, and the pitcher into the river. Faithful Jones. But Gruffanuff flung her arms round the archbishop's neck, and bellowed out, Justice, justice, my lord chancellor, so loudly that her piercing shrieks caused everybody to pause. As for Rosalba, she was borne away lifeless by her ladies, and you may imagine the look of agony which Giglio cast towards that lovely being, as his hope, his joy, his darling, his all-in-all, was thus removed, and in her place the horrid old Gruffanuff rushed up to his side, and once more shrieked out, Justice! Justice! Won't you take that sum of money which Glumboso hid? Says Giglio. 218,000 millions, or thereabouts. It's a handsome sum. I will have that and you too, says Gruffanuff. Let us throw the crown jewels into the bargain, gasps out Giglio. I will wear them by my Giglio's side, says Gruffanuff. Will half, three quarters, five sixths, 19/20 of my kingdom do, Countess? Asks the trembling monarch. What were all Europe to me without you, my Giglio? Cries Gruff, kissing his hand. I won't, I can't, I shan't, I'll resign the crown first, shouts Giglio, tearing away his hand. But Gruff clung to it. I have a competency, my love, she says, and with thee, and a cottage thy Barbara will be happy. Giglio was half mad with rage by this time. Will not marry her, says he. H, fairy, fairy, give me counsel? And as he spoke he looked wildly round at the severe face of the fairy Blackstick. Why is fairy Blackstick always advising me, and warning me to keep my word? Does she suppose that I am not a man of honor? Said the fairy, quoting Giglio's own haughty words. He quailed under the brightness of her eyes. He felt that there was no escape for him from that awful Inquisition. "Well, Archbishop," said he in a dreadful voice, that made his grace start, "since this fairy has led me to the height of happiness, but to dash me down into the depths of despair, since I am to lose Rosalba, let me at least keep my honor. Get up, Countess, and let us be married. I can keep my word, but I can die afterwards." "Oh, dear Giglio," cries Gruffanuff, skipping up, I knew I could trust thee, I knew that my prince was the soul of honor. Jump into your carriages, ladies and gentlemen, and let us go to church at once. And as for dying, dear Giglio, no, no. Thou wilt forget that insignificant little chambermaid of a queen thou wilt live, to be consoled by thy Barbara. She wishes to be a queen, and not a queen dowager, my gracious lord. And hanging upon poor Giglio's arm, and leering and grinning in his face in the most disgusting manner, this old wretch tripped off in her white satin shoes, and jumped into the very carriage which had been got ready to convey Giglio and Rosalba to church. The cannons roared again, the bells pealed triple bobmajors, the people came out flinging flowers upon the path of the royal bride and bridegroom, and Gruff looked out of the gilt coach window, and bowed and grinned to them. Phew, the horrid old wretch! Zix! And now we come to the last scene in the pantomime. The many ups and downs of her life had given the Princess Rosalba prodigious strength of mind, and that highly principled young woman presently recovered from her fainting fit, out of which fairy blackstick, by a precious essence which the fairy always carried in her pocket, awakened her. Instead of tearing her hair, crying, and bemoaning herself, and fainting again, as many young women would have done, Rosalba remembered that she owed an example of firmness to her subjects, and though she loved Giglio more than her life, was determined, as she told the fairy, not to interfere between him and justice, or to cause him to break his royal word. "I cannot marry him, but I shall love him always," says she to Blackstick. "I will go, and be present at his marriage with the Countess, and sign the book, and wish them happy with all my heart. I will see, when I get home, whether I cannot make the new queen some handsome presents. The Crim Tartary crown diamonds are uncommonly fine, and I shall never have any use for them. I will." Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.